So subject two, now who's going to actually, it's called deeding you the house. Who's actually going to deed you the house? How many people have had houses deeded to them? Yep, happens all the time. Well, Alex just had his. We've had several. When I first heard about it, I thought, this is crazy. Who's going to deed me their house? People do the craziest things, especially when they're motivated, number one. You know who else is going to deed you the house? The person that is trading up and can't sell their property. You know, when this market starts to slow down and people are buying another house and they need to get out of theirs, they're going to sell you their house subject to, you're going to take over the existing mortgage, you're going to make that payment so they can qualify for their next loan. So that's going to happen a lot. So who would do it? Anybody that's motivated for any particular reason to do it. Here's one that we bought subject to. This woman was 10 months behind. She was 10 months behind because obviously she hadn't paid her mortgage. She had called us on a flyer. This is a three-bedroom house, no basement, California ranch. They used to be called slab ranches. Everybody remember that? But then marketing took hold. Now they're California ranches. It's about $12,000 to bring it current. The renovations were $4,500. The amount we gave to the seller was nothing at the beginning because we told her that, you know, there was no money to walk away. But when we went to resell it, we told her we'd give her $3,000. Monthly payments were $942. We needed about $23,000 to get into the deal. It was one of the first deals we bought. I actually got that money from a friend of mine. Sold it for $121. Mortgage amount was $90. Renovations were $4,100. When I went to resell it, I gave her the $3,000. You know why? Because I told her I would. That's right, that's integrity. 3 months in payments, $754 to a friend there and 10% interest, and we made about $18,000 on that particular property. But that was one we did. Let me show you how subject twos work with numbers. And this is your three profit centers with subject twos. Same house, $140,000. Payments, $870 per month. They owe $110,000. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to lease option this property, all right? What a lease option is I'm going to lease somebody the property so they can move into it with the option to purchase it sometime in the future, all right? Because I'm giving them that option, if it's worth $150,000, I'm going to option that off for about $155,000 because in the future, real estate values tend to increase, number one. Number two, the people that are going to do lease options are people that are in trouble. Not so much in trouble, but have a challenge to overcome. Like, they don't have enough money to get into a house, but they want to really get into a house. They've got a credit problem that they need some time to resolve. So they're challenged. They've got some cash, but they can't get a mortgage. So they'll be happy to pay to do the option for more than market value. So we do the option for $155,000. Now, we're going to require that they come up with 3 or 5% down to get into the property. So at $155,000, I'm requiring 3 or 5% down. I at least want them to put $5,000 into the deal. So they're going to give me $5,000 on an option fee. It's not a deposit. It's called a non-refundable option fee, and that's what you're going to have in your option. It's going to be non-refundable. When you do your lease option, you're going to have two different documents. One's for the lease and one's for the option. And in doing that, because if you go to housing court, the first thing they're going to say is that $5,000 was a deposit. If you have both your lease and your option in the same document, the court's going to construe that as being their deposit. So it's got to be two separate documents. So you make your money up front, $5,000. Now, they're going to have to pay you, because you're leasing it, they're going to have to pay rent to stay into the property. All right? If market rent is, say, $1,000, you're paying out $870, you're making about $130, which isn't much, but at least you're paying for the property until you get your big payday, which is over here. Is when they exercise that option for $155,000, you're going to make $35,000. You're going to make $35,000 on the back end when they buy. You're going to make $5,000 on the front end when they go into the property on the option fee. And you're going to make $130 a month as they go through.
Isn't this supposed to be a pretty house devoid of repairs? I mean, since you're buying it in a pre-foreclosure status, I will assume that the property needs some repairs.
Does it, yeah, the question is, does it have to be a pretty house? Pretty house meaning that it's in good shape, doesn't need any repairs. A lot of people, this is a favorite strategy for people that quote-unquote buy pretty houses, and you can, but you can also go in there with the intention of knowing that you're going to make some repairs before you do the lease option. So maybe you're going to have to come out of pocket a little bit of money. If I don't have to, I don't come out of pocket going into this deal. I may have to make up their back payments if they're behind on their mortgage, all right, to make it current. So I may have to make up 2, 3, 4, and in that lady's particular case, it was 10 months behind. And you definitely make the repairs before you put somebody in, because what happened was we had a property and this lady was in there, and she was just crazy. She was in there for about 2 years. She used to call my office and she used to leave me messages at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. All right, and my message is 3 minutes long. She'd leave 3 messages in a row. She'd just go on and on and on about, she was going to buy the property. She was going to exercise her option. And as she was doing it, getting her mortgage, she decided she wasn't going to pay rent. And we've got really strict guidelines for our rent. If they're 5 days past due on their rent, we send out the eviction notice. It's not to evict them. It's just to get the rent in within the next 14 days, or we go to the next step, which is summary process. So she hadn't sent it in, so we sent her the eviction. Well, first I called her, you know, where's your rent? She said, oh, I'm buying the property. I said, I know you're buying it, but you still need to pay your rent. She said, well, I'm buying the property. I says, I know, but you're not going to close for 2 months. I need the rent. She says, okay. She doesn't send it in. I send her the eviction notice. She gets mad at me. She's going to buy the property for $110,000. I'm into it for about $95,000. The property is now worth $140,000. She's got $30,000 in equity on this property right away. She gets mad at me. She calls the Board of Health. And she sends the Board of Health down there. She says there's all kinds of violations in there, where there was water coming in the back, which there was, and plus she was a pig. I mean, the place was a mess. And they came after me for it because I didn't get a Board of Health certificate going into the property. So it's like, Audrey, what are you doing? Just close on the property, you know? Take your money and run. Well, it ended up that she took me to court. It dragged out for about 6 months. She didn't pay her rent. She didn't exercise the option. She lost in court, and the property was then worth about $150,000. I took the property over, I evicted her. She was a mother with 2 kids. I felt bad for her. She was definitely something wrong with her head, you know, not to do that deal. So I actually gave her back her deposit, just sent her on her way, you know, because we were going to make so much money on it anyways. Then the reason that you do your repairs before you option that property out is the fact that they can call the Board of Health and they can stop paying their rent to you because of that. I know some people teach that you can get into a property and have the leaseor do the repairs. Put something in writing that they're going to do the repairs. That doesn't work when you go to housing court.
If something major happens while they're in the house renting or leasing the house, an oil burner goes, an example, $2,000 to $3,000, repair it.
Yep.
And whose responsibility is that?
You are, as the owner, because you've leased the property. So a lot of people will only do subject twos, pre-house subject twos, where they get their monthly fee, their front-end deal, and their back-end deal. Now, doing the lease options, only 20% of the people actually close on them. So what you're doing is you're collecting a lot of these front-end fees.
Dave, I thought the difference between leasing and renting was that when you lease a property, the person that you're leasing it to pays all the expenses, repairs. They pay all the expenses.
No, absolutely not. The person
so you
that,
still pay taxes, yep, insure it, everything?
Yes, the person who owns a property pays the repairs and the taxes and the insurance. You can try to increase this monthly amount by the amounts of the insurance and what you think the water bills might be.
At the very end of a lease option period, say it's two years, and the option comes up and the person is not going to exercise their option, can't they just leave and get a new, can you extend that?
If the person isn't going to exercise their option at the end of the 2 years where their option is up, then they've got to give you another option fee to extend it longer. And you decide what that option fee is going to be.
Or you can get another person in there.
Well, yeah, you get another person in there. They pay an option fee to come in.
Now, do you actually own the house?
Yes.
Because I thought that the way lease options worked, you were in control of the property, but you didn't
That's
actually
something different.
Own it.
All right, you're talking, now when I'm the owner and I'm lease optioning it out, that's an exit strategy for me to sell, all right? You can also buy on a lease option, but it's the worst out of all the different options there is to buy. That's the worst one you can use because you only have a lease on the property, you don't have control of the property, and you have to exercise that option sometime in the future, and the owner can decide that they're not going to exercise the option, and then you have to bring them to court. And that happens a lot, especially if properties appreciate a great deal. So lease option, if you can help it, you know, it's the last way you want to get into a deal is a lease option. You want to take it over subject to or buy it outright.
Yep, go ahead.
I want to concentrate on buying subject to and selling. One of the strategies would be lease option. How, and I'm having a hard time with this, how do you explain to a seller in a nice, smooth way that you're going to buy the property subject to? You must have it down to a T.
Yeah, well, basically, it's just all in the presentation with all the other the information that you're giving to
them. Credibility, you follow, yeah, the credibility. And then how do you, like, if you were to tell me, explain to me that you're buying my property subject to?
Well, I would tell you that what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy your property subject to, which means I'm going to be taking over your mortgage. The deeds are going to go into my name. And how that's going to benefit you is that I'm going to make up all your back payments. All right, so you're not going to have a foreclosure on your record for the next 7 years. And I'm also going to be bringing your credit current as well, because I'm going to be making the payments month after month. So I'm going to be fixing your credit history. So you benefited in two ways. And I'm going to give you money to leave instead of having a foreclosure and you being put out on the sidewalk with nothing. You've already done your credibility kit. I'm taking over the mortgage. I'm going to be making the payments. You should have something in there from different bankers showing you, even your credit report in there that you make all payments, because that's your biggest hurdle. The mortgage is still in their name. You don't make the payment. And you're going to actually have them sign, it's called a CMA letter as well, where you're covering your butt, that says that I may not make the payment, but you always do. But you need that letter in there in case for some reason you get taken to court. The subject to is on the pre-foreclosures. We close a very high percentage. When markets are rising, it's very difficult to buy a property subject to from somebody that doesn't really need to sell, or somebody that's just selling to get into a higher-end property, because they've got so many other options. The market's in a high demand cycle. Any questions on options or subject to's or lease options?
Yes, I have two questions. I was wondering what the difference is between lease options and subject to's, because they sound like the same thing. And my second question is...
Let me answer the first one first.
Okay.
And that's when you're talking about buying. The difference between lease option and subject to is, in subject to, you get the deed. It gets transferred into your trust. So, which means you have control. On a lease option, it never gets transferred to you. You're leased the property, so you don't have control of the property. The property still stays in the owner's name, and they've actually got to execute the closing when you exercise your option.
So, in the case of a subject to, since it's being transferred to your name,
yep.
Can the bank call the loan due since a transfer has taken place?
Yeah, that's called the acceleration clause.
Yeah,
I've heard of it happening once. Banks very rarely. If you're paying the mortgage, very rarely will they call a loan due. They'll just happen to be getting their money. They don't want to foreclose on the property.
All right, and then my last question is that in her example, if you negotiate a subject to with her and then you place an ad and I respond to the ad, I thought that if you decide to lease option the property, I thought that once I move into the property and pay you the non-refundable $5,000 fee, that I'm responsible for the upkeep of the property while I'm in it. But I just heard you just say that you're still responsible for the repairs of the property.
Yeah, you are. You can put it in your lease that they're responsible for the repairs, but if you ever go before a housing court, the housing court is going to look at you as the ultimately being responsible, and they're going to negate that clause from your lease. There are a couple of states that will allow you to do that, but they're very few, far between. And there's a lot of people that actually, you can have that lease clause in there. This is the way you sell a lease option. You tell them that it's ownership and training. We're training you to be the owner of the property, so when you actually take over, when you exercise your option, you'll be a homeowner. So in doing that, we need you to take care of the lawn. You know, we need you to shovel the snow. We need you to do the minor repairs on the property as if you were a homeowner. And they're all excited about getting into the property. They'll agree to anything. You know, and then it gets to a point where all of a sudden they can't make your payments, and then they stop doing stuff. That's the way it works. Do you need to set up a trust for every property that you own? It's a good idea to. Every property that we own is in a trust. Or a limited liability company. You don't put the property in a trust because of the tax break. You put it into a trust so you have anonymity, so people don't know that you own the property. It's like a thin veil. A limited liability company is much better. When we first started investing, Massachusetts didn't recognize limited liability companies. So I learned how to do trusts, and we put all our properties in trusts. Now we're starting to put them in limited liability companies. They're all in individual nominee trusts. Yeah, and we've got separate checking accounts for each one of them. We've got a lot of old checkbooks lying around. And filing cabinets. What's the difference between a limited liability and a trust? Well, just that. A limited liability company limits your liability in the property. Whereas a trust has two beneficiaries. Once, if an attorney goes in, it's called piercing the corporate veil, if they get into your trust, those beneficiaries have unlimited liability once it's known who they are. A limited liability company is a much better entity to hold your properties in.
When you're talking about pre-foreclosures, you said you'd work on the behalf of the homeowner to try and, I wasn't 100% sure. You were working with the homeowner and at the bank to tack, divide some number by 12 or 24 and tack on the...
Okay.
I didn't understand
that. Yeah, there's a little confusion with everybody, I think. When we're working on behalf of the homeowner, Well, and if they say if they're 3 months behind, okay, and they're $3,000 behind on payments, what we'll do is we'll take that $3,000 and we'll divide it by 12. And anybody got a calculator? What's $3,000 divided by 12? About $270. So we'll take that $270 and add it on to their monthly payment of $1,000 and say, hey, look, for the next year, they'll pay you $1,270 to get caught up. Will that be okay? And what we try to do is actually do it in 24 months because it's easier for the homeowner. Now, in doing that, also, these people are in foreclosure already. People don't change their habits, okay? If they start paying, they're going to be so grateful to you that you actually get the workout done, but it's going to be about 5 or 6 months down the road, and they're going to be in the same trouble again, and they're going to be calling you again, and they're going to finally realize that, hey, maybe we should sell this thing. So that's where you get a deal later on down the line, too, because of your good deeds. Okay, let's take one more, and I want to get into apartments.
I wanted to share something that I had read today about trust. And I just wanted to run it by you and see if you had anything to add to it. And that was that some people have gone into corporations and done blanket trusts so that, you know, they don't have to go into each and every individual property and, you know, put it in trust individually.
Yep.
But I was told today that it's much better to do it that way because you're going to be looked at by the tax people as a big corporation and taxed accordingly, whereas you remain more, you have more anonymity.
Well, I'll tell you what, the problem with putting them all under the same umbrella of trust is that when one property goes down, then there's a risk of them all going down with it. Yep, go ahead.
How do you handle the, when you buy subject to?
Yep, go ahead.
When you buy subject to in a pre-foreclosure, like you were saying, how do you what kind of paperwork do you use to notify the bank of the trust and also insurance?
The paperwork I use to notify the bank that we're taking over the property is a management form. We have a letter signed by the owners at the time, and it says, Dear Bank, PHP Management will now be managing my property. All correspondence should be sent to the following address. At the closing of the, if the property changed hands, any additional escrow money should be sent to PHP Realty. And they sign it.